the left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
All right, let's get things going on this Tuesday. It is Tuesday, October 22nd. Welcome to the Scotiabank Saddledome and welcome to the Hot Stove Lounge. Flames Talk this hour underway on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Lots to dive into on this hour. Daily Flames Roundtable in just a little bit, but it is a Tuesday, which means we're kicking off this hour by saying hello to our NHL insider, Frank Saravalli. Time to check in on around the NHL and a few Calgary Flames things as well. Frank Saravalli brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com. Frank joins us now from Daily Faceoff and DailyFaceoff.com. Mr. Saravalli, how are you today?
Pretty good. How are you, Pat? I'm in Chicago at the United Center. I'm standing maybe arm's length away from the Michael Jordan statue, so getting set for the Frozen Frenzy tonight. All 32 teams in action.
Yeah, and all kind of staggered throughout the evening on this Tuesday. Should be a lot of fun with all 32 teams and 16 games on this Frozen Frenzy Tuesday. Well, Frankie, it was a little less than a week ago, I guess 5 days ago, when you jumped on Amazon and had the little news nugget about the Calgary Flames looking for a center iceman. I know you talked to the boys on Friday on the big show about it. I'm just curious as to where the status report stands on that. Is the Flames, from your reporting, honing in and or working the phones trying to bring in an additional center? What's the status report on that, my friend?
Yeah, certainly still working. And look, to be fair, and I mentioned this with the boys on Friday, because people seem to get up in arms. Oh, the Flames were off to a 4-0 start. Look at them. They're looking to add and build this roster. Why do we do things like this? And the truth is, the Flames have been looking since going back to the end of training camp.
Yep.
They're going to continue to be on the prowl for a center, hopefully in their mind, someone that fits their age scheme with the team that they're building, like think mid-20s, think someone that they could have some cost certainty and control with, think someone that could play comfortably in the middle six, and in a perfect world, if everything went right, someone that's also right shooting. Now, that's a long laundry list of things to want in one transaction with one player, but what I don't really understand and still I'm trying to wrap my brain around is sort of the reaction from the marketplace, which is, why can't this team just be bad? And I think we've already determined just with the start of this season, even though we're barely 2 weeks in, that this team, they're never going to bottom out. That's not part of their DNA. That's not part of their plan. And I just don't know that it's possible with the pieces that they have. So this is going to be a chip away at this rebuild, try and accumulate as many pieces as possible to continue to add to the pile. And that's sort of the thought process moving forward.
Want to dig a little bit more into kind of the profile of a center they might be looking at. Because it's that, like, we're not talking about a team trying to go
enough.
Up. Well, no, I just want to dig a little bit deeper on it because it's a fascinating conversation. Because I think the important thing is that they're not trying to go and find a 29, 30-year-old replacement as a number one center. The thing that really is most important to me is, you know, looking for some center depth and looking for somebody kind of 25, 24, which has been part of the MO for the Flames under Craig Conroy since he took over, since they made that Tyler Toffoli trade in June of 2023. That whole idea of a younger guy but who can jump into NHL games right now, that's been a part of this conversation right from the get-go.
Yeah, not only that, but we still aren't even entirely sure yet how big of a swing Craig Conroy and his team are willing to make. I mean, this could be something as simple as plucking someone off of waivers. Now, it's not often you have someone that is a center that fits that age scheme that you know makes it to waivers, but nonetheless, varying degrees of possibilities in terms of what that acquisition looks like. So, look, it's someone I think ideally that you can continue to build around for. It's not just a stopgap, a holdover, a piece that they're not looking for a warm body to just plug in, I don't think. I think they're looking for something potentially that could be there for a little bit, which is all part of, it's all part of the plan. This isn't, I guess this is the other thing I wanted to point out. It's this isn't disjointed. People,
right?
You know, latching on to my report saying, oh, well, like, look, now they're going after a center. Well, you know, I thought we're rebuilding. And it's like, this is part of it. Again, it goes back to trying to accumulate as many pieces as possible and chip away at that to get better and better and build. That's going to be the name of the game.
Yeah, it's one thing that we've been talking a lot about here over the last little bit and spent a good chunk of time on last week, Frank, is just the whole idea. And the timing of it was really interesting, the timing of your report on Thursday on Amazon, because I think the Flames are very adamant, and I know Craig Conroy is – I don't see him deviating from a plan if they start 4-0, if they start 10-4, if they start, you know, 21-9-5, whatever the case may be. Like, he's got a blueprint, he's got a plan, and I don't think that they're going to deviate from the big picture just because they could get distracted by some – perhaps more success than they thought they were going to have early on, or definitely people on the outside thought they were going to have early on. Like, that's an important message too in the whole thing that I think is important you point out, is that this is all part of the plan, and the blueprint, the big picture hasn't changed just based on the reporting on Thursday, right?
100%. And that's, first off, context and nuance. Those things aren't made for 30-second reports in the middle of a whip-around show. So those things do get lost. And yeah, I mean, look, I think whatever unfolds this season with regards to the Flames and their transactions and roster decisions, it's largely going to be irrespective of whatever the team's record is. You could see that team near a playoff spot or in the mix for a playoff spot in early February, they might have to make really hard decisions, and they might have to ultimately have to say goodbye to some pieces because they've played that well and their value is that high. Mm-hmm. It's ultimately, since Craig Conroy took over, it's sort of ultimately been building toward how can we get this team to be a playoff team and a sustained team that has a chance to win by the time this new arena opens? That's sort of the long-term vision goal, and they're not deviating from that now based on a good-looking start to the first 2 weeks of this season.
Yeah, when we spoke last time, Frank, the Flames were 3-for-3 to start the year. Since that time, they've won one against Chicago and dropped an overtime loss Saturday in Seattle. Now that they're 5 games in, I'm just curious, you're kind of 80-foot view on the Flames, and you're a far view on the Flames through 5 games now.
Well, the math really starts to get interesting, and I think Eric Francis had pointed some of this out just with the amount of points the Flames have accumulated already. I mean, teams in similar positions over the last, you know, number of years have made the playoffs 91% of the time. And I'm not ready at this point, 2 weeks in, to make any sort of declaration one way or the other about this team. I told you before the puck dropped in this season that I thought the Flames had a chance to surprise a few people. I sensed how motivated they were to prove people wrong, and also just how much more cohesive this group is, because a lot of the guys that maybe didn't want to be there or had eyes elsewhere ended up elsewhere, and now you've got this collection of 23 to 25 guys that really want to be there, that means something. But to me, I think you need a bigger sample size. If we get to Halloween, if we get to, just inside of November, to me, that's when I think, the first 3 weeks of the season, a lot of people get fooled either positively or negatively. But once you get beyond that, I think things really start to crystallize, and I think what you are at that point is really what you'll end up being for most of the season.
We're chatting with Frank Saravalli. He is our NHL Insider Daily Faceoff, dailyfaceoff.com, and more. He joins us Tuesdays here on Flames Talk. I know that Dallas ends up beating Edmonton on Saturday, but we spoke last week about a dreadful Oilers start. Have you felt like things have maybe started to normalize a little bit in Edmonton after what was a pretty dreadful start to the season?
A little bit. I mean, that hasn't helped Oiler fans. Like, they still are a bit up in arms. As I make my rounds through each of the markets on a daily basis, I can tell you that there still is certainly some angst there. But I'm watching that team. I'm not really concerned. Like, had they had all of their, firepower been operating on all cylinders to this point, and they were still finding ways to lose games or their defense looked really porous, I'd be a lot more concerned. We're at a spot now with the Oilers where both of their goalies have save percentages in the mid-800s. Their top stars haven't been producing anywhere near the level that that we thought they would. Their power play has been dreadful. Their penalty kill has been awful. I mean, in a lot of ways, it can't really get much worse for the Oilers, and I say that knowing that this team went 2-9-1 to start last year. But they also almost got through the week and dominated the Dallas Stars for 40 minutes and were that close to getting through the week 3-3. So it's really not that big of a deal. It's not that deep. And that's sort of where the Oilers are at as they pick things up here this week.
What are your observations on this Predators team that has started their year 0-5 after so many additions from Shea to Stamkos and Marchessault in the offseason? What's your read on this just dreadful start for the Nashville Predators?
It's been surprising on so many levels. Like, I'm shocked that this team that has this much firepower has really struggled to score. More than that, I'm surprised how much they've given up, how many chances they've traded. You've heard Andrew Brunette talk about fire wagon hockey. And you also saw a really interesting quote from him today as they, try and get on the board here. He said, he talked about sometimes when he gets frustrated and disappointed, he turns into a bad person. And I'm paraphrasing his quote. But he said he feels like some of that has infiltrated their room already, which to me might have been one of the most damning things said so far about this team. They need to find a way to figure it out, just as I talked about the Flames and their point total and what that's meant for playoffs and having a successful season. I mean, the Preds are flirting with history here. No team in the salary cap era has ever made the playoffs, at 0-5. Accumulating 0 points in their out of their first 10 available. It's been since 96, I think, is the last team to do it. So it's been a long time, and certainly the math, in the NHL, more than any other sport, it just begins to spiral against you.
Is it just a chemistry thing in your eyes? I'm like, the whole thing, they were such a surprising group last year. They looked like they were going in the right direction, and then Barry Trotz doubles down with all those free agent signings, and they keep Saros, they trade Askarov. Is it just a chemistry thing in your eyes?
I think it's, part of it is adjusting to so many new faces. I mean, think about just the changes to their power play. Part of it is they just aren't defending well enough. I don't know if that's compete. I don't think it's an effort thing. And by the way, like, when you're not scoring either, and I know I mentioned that they're giving up a lot of chances, like, same thing with the Oilers, it's okay to get a stop from your goalie every now and again.
Right.
Saros has not been as sharp to start, and sometimes you need your goalie when you're still trying to figure out the rest of it to come in and bail you out, and I just don't know that that's happened.
Few other points I wanted to hit on with you. It's Frank Saravalli, our Daily Faceoff NHL insider. He joins us Tuesdays here on Flames Talk. What'd you make of that nice little bridge deal for Jake Neighbors and the St. Louis Blues? 3.75 on a 2-year deal for Jake, who's coming off a really nice season. That's a good little tidy piece of business for both sides.
Just probably a sigh of relief for the St. Louis Blues, and I wouldn't be shocked at all to see other teams begin to try and get some of their RFAs locked up before you get even close to the offseason, before you have them have another big year. Look, the Blues were the team that inflicted the damage on the Edmonton Oilers, stealing two of their players, and Philip Broberg has been off to an unbelievable eye-opening start since coming over on that offer sheet. I truly believe that teams are going to really try and do everything they can to prevent their players from even becoming restricted free agents where they might be subject to offer sheets. Like, don't even allow it to be a possibility. Get the work done early. Neighbors had 27 goals last year, second on the team. Huge step forward for a really talented kid, late first-round pick, that, to me, has still so much room to grow in his game. I mean, just look at his production. The guy couldn't buy an assist last year, which is why he didn't probably get a lot more attention league-wide in terms of the point total. But nonetheless, as St. Louis, you know, another team that's sort of transitioning and trying to get back in that playoff mix again, getting him under $4 million a year for the next 2 years, like, that's a solid win.
I know you're in Chicago right now, and as you get set to watch that game at United Center, I saw you put it on Twitter a little earlier, just Thatcher Demko getting some work in Chicago before the Canucks play the Blackhawks later on this Tuesday night. What's your understanding? How close to a return is Thatcher Demko in Vancouver?
Not very.
Really, hey?
Look, I think the best way to describe it is that the ball is in Thatcher Demko's court. I think the Canucks are sitting back, no pressure, no rush. Kevin Lankinen has come in. He's been excellent to start. They still feel really confident in Arthur Seelov, and they're going to allow him to kind of set the timeline here. If you said to me right now that Thatcher Demko wouldn't be coming back until sometime in December, I wouldn't be shocked by that. I wouldn't be shocked if it extended longer than that. There's really not a ton of pressure. And, yes, it's a weird situation because we were also talking about this guy potentially coming back at some point during the playoffs. And now there's just so much uncertainty around him finding the proper strength in that knee to support his body and his movement. I don't know what other solutions exist. I don't believe there's a surgical option, and he's just trying to find it again, and I don't know when that's going to happen or click for him, and it might just also be a new reality that he kind of has to adapt to. So I think the good news is their goaltending's been fine, and that's really certainly decreased the temperature there.
Yeah. Is Demko being unable to play a full season? You know, you talk about a new reality Demko has to adjust to. Is that the reality Vancouver is going to have to accept, that full seasons maybe just aren't in the cards for this guy?
I mean, I think it's probably too early to make that declaration. Like, I know what his history has been. If you want to look at it from another perspective, I might look at it and say, if he gets right and feels really good, this is someone that could be really fresh for the playoffs. So
right.
That's the lens that I would prefer to look at it through. But nonetheless, it's just such an odd injury that I don't I think in some ways they're kind of at a loss.
Yeah. Last piece of news on this Tuesday. Not like this is not like you saw this news pop up and said, "Oh boy, that's a shocker." But notable nonetheless, as Paul Maurice gets a multi-year extension as head coach of the Florida Panthers. That fit couldn't have been any better. Him taking over for Andrew Brunette a couple seasons ago, two trips to the Stanley Cup final, like that really couldn't have gone any better than it has in his first 2 years with the Panthers.
No, and I can distinctly remember a conversation that I had with Paul Maurice a couple years ago. I tracked him down on his phone, and he was sitting at the edge of his dock in Manitoba. And I said, "When are you coming back?" And he said, "I might not." He said, "Life's really peaceful out here. I've really enjoyed the break. I think he left Winnipeg on way more acrimonious terms than a lot of us realized at the time."
Mm-hmm.
And he needed a reset. And I think it took a really special opportunity with a team that had won the President's Trophy before to really kind of, for lack of a better term, get him off his ass and get him back in the game. And then you see him back there, and you see how fired up he is, and you see his emotion and passion. Like, it's all still there. And so that part, I think, has been really exciting to see. And more than that, it just seems like the right guy at the right time for that team, that just to see him have that success after so long in the league. I can't tell you how many people that I contacted to write a Paul Maurice story the night they won the Cup. We're just so overjoyed to talk about him and what he's meant to that team. So it's been a great story, and it just kind of goes to show you, like, you know, at times in your life when you think, you know, things you might have struck out or this might be the end. It's not even the first time he thought that might be the end. He went to Russia to coach, you know, also thinking my time as an NHL head coach is over. You never know where life takes you, and I think another great reminder of that.
I always ask you, but I always like to make sure, too, anything else that's got the Frank Saravalli juices flowing, or do we hit everything in your eyes today?
Just frozen frenzy. This is everything you want if you're a hockey fan. You sit back on your couch tonight and you channel surf from game to game to game with the staggered starts. I mean, especially being in the mountain time zone, you could go from 4 to midnight tonight and not move except for bathroom breaks, and it would be pretty awesome.
Yep, it's a pretty cool idea. I'm glad they're doing it, and I'm looking forward to being a part of it. We'll talk next week. We'll hear you Friday with the boys. Enjoy the rest of your time in Chicago. Thanks, Frank. Appreciate it, buddy.
See you, Pat.
Frank Saravalli is our Daily Faceoff NHL Insider. He joins us Tuesdays on Flames Talk, and he joins us brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit southtrailchrysler.com.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Time now for a Tuesday edition of the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. Aaron Vickers joins Flames Talk now for the rest of the hour. Hello, Vicks.
Hello, Patty. How are we?
Good, man. Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, and now the voice of the Calgary Flames, Derek Wills, also here at the Scotiabank Saddledome to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. Gents, on this Tuesday night, Anthony Mantha hits a milestone in his career. He'll play his 500th NHL game and number 6 as a member of the Flames. I think the 500 is the one we'll focus on, though. And he spoke on Tuesday morning and talked about, Jesus, it's been a long road to get here and a lot of injuries and, you know, a lot of guys get here quicker than maybe he did. But now 6 games into his Flames career as he tries to show people on a show-me one-year contract. I'm just curious, as Anthony Mantha hits a 500-game milestone, what we've made of him so far in his early Flames career.
Only 1,207 more games, and he'll move into a tie with his grandfather,
Marcel Pronovo, who spent parts of 21 seasons in the NHL, playing in 1,206 games with the Red Wings and the Maple Leafs, and won 5 Stanley Cups on his way to the Hockey Hall of Fame back in 1979. But the apple didn't fall far from the tree. Anthony Mantha, I mean, to play one game in this league is an incredible accomplishment. To play 500 is quite something. And, you know, he's a guy who at times has been frustrating for his teams and for fans of his teams to watch, because I think he's got the complete package. He's got great size. He's strong. He's skilled. He plays on the edge when he is engaged in a game and can be one of those guys who you hate to play against. And we've certainly seen that guy at times in his first 5 games as a member of the Calgary Flames. And I still think it was a really good addition by Craig Conroy. The team has surprised most around the NHL, going 4-0-1 on their first 5 games. And he's been a part of that, playing on the right side of a line with Martin Pospisil and Jonathan Huberdeau. But signing him for 1 year at $3.5 million, for me, is a win-win, because if the Flames surprise everybody and push for a playoff spot, and he is a good fit playing opposite of Huberdeau, then you can keep him. If not, I think he's an easy guy to flip on a one-year deal with the package that he can offer a team heading towards the Stanley Cup playoffs. The last couple of games, I would say the group hasn't been at their best, and he's been part of that, but really liked him in the first 3, especially the first 1 when he had a Gordie Howe hat trick, and he's been a good fit on this team so far, in my opinion.
Yeah, I feel like I almost have to grade on a curve a little bit, because the entire team as a whole hasn't looked good, as good in the past 2 games as they did in their opening 3. You mentioned he started off incredibly strong, and just from a teammate perspective, the way that he went after JT Miller, took one bad penalty but still made JT Miller answer the bell, had a Gordie Howe hat trick in that game, 2 goals and 4 points through his first 3. Again, he's faded a little bit for me the past 2 games, when we've seen a disjointed sort of game flow against the Chicago Blackhawks, against the Seattle Kraken. The thing that I kind of circle or highlight the most is he has just 1 shot in his past 2 games, and that's for a player that it was made a pretty big spectacle in the preseason of trying to reach 300 shots this season. As it stands, he's on pace for 115, which is just a little bit off that pace. And again, grading on a curve, those 2 games against Chicago and Seattle, there weren't a whole lot of players on both sides that, you know, had standout performances. Maybe he's a little bit of a victim in terms of my grading, in terms of what he was able to accomplish the first 3 games. But as a whole, he's been a very strong addition. You mentioned the asset management of bringing him in, but also the ability to kind of try and jumpstart Jonathan Huberdeau and just the things that he can bring to the Calgary Flames. Overall, so far, so good for me.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like the start a lot. The game that's been the high water mark for me was the Edmonton game, where he had 5 attempts. He scores the game winner. He was just all around it and looked like a guy that was going to be a handful. And when Anthony Mantha's on, as we know, he can be a real handful, because his mix of skill and size and strength makes him a really difficult guy to contain. The problem is that, as we talked about, consistency has always been a little bit of a knock on him. And you know, to Vix's point, it's not just a Mantha thing, because the team has been a little bit disjointed the last 2 games as well. But just 1 shot attempt in the last 2 games at all strengths. Mm-hmm. And so for a guy, is the 300 number attainable? No, I think it was more. And I know when I put that tweet out there early in training camp, people were like, what is this guy talking about? He's not going to get to 300 shots. And that's not why I put it out there. It's not like, oh, watch out, Anthony Mantha's going to hit 300 shots. I think there were like 10 guys who got to 300 shots last year in the NHL. It's more what I thought was really important about putting that out there was the whole mindset the Flames want him to be in, to be in a shoot-first mentality and to use his explosive shot. I mean, he and amongst the forwards, he and Kuzmenko are the 2 guys that I think would have opposing goalies most afraid of that guy taking a shot from anywhere on the ice, because in both cases, it's off the stick so quickly and it's a pretty explosive shot. So, you know, 1 shot attempt in the last 2 games, that's something that you want to see more of. You know, the Edmonton game, he had 5, and in his first 3 games, he had a combined 10. And if you're seeing something more along those lines, then I think you're a whole lot happier about where his game is. So I think that the mindset is the most important thing that, that the Flames are working on things with Mantha, because that shot is such a weapon, and I think you want to see it more than you have these last couple of games.
You do, and you've got one of the best playmakers in the game in Jonathan Huberdeau on the opposite wing, and I still think that line is a work in progress, because I chatted with Martin Pospisil earlier today, and he told me that it's been an adjustment for him going from playing the wing as a rookie to playing center as a sophomore. So I think as he gets more comfortable, that line will continue to improve. But the last couple of games, I mean, the first one against the Blackhawks was the third game in four nights for the Flames. That's a tough stretch. And now what? One game in
6 days,
5 days, yeah. 2-7 if you include this one tonight. So they haven't played a lot of hockey, and they did look a little out of sync against the Kraken, in my opinion. But, you know, Anthony Mantha is a guy who is 300 shots a stretch, yeah. But I'd love to see him get to 200 because, Pat, to your point, you look at Andre Kuzmenko, Matt Coronado, when he's healthy, Yegor Sharangovich, these guys all have great shots. But Anthony Mantha, for me, is right in that group of guys who has a shot that should be considered a weapon.
Guess so, I forgot Sharangovich.
Yeah.
We haven't seen him play yet this year.
Yeah, only in the preseason. But, he should use it more. I think he'd be the first guy to tell you that. And you got to put yourself in a position to shoot the puck. So just building some chemistry with his line mates, I think, will help in that regard. But all things considered, five games in, I think so far so good for him in the Flames.
I mean, when you look at the production that that line has done individually, with Martin Pospisil having, 4 points in five games, somewhere right there for Anthony Mantha as well, it hasn't been a doom and gloom start for that line. It hasn't been a doom and gloom start for Mantha. But yeah, you got to get more pucks on net. And to your point, Wilsey, you need to work yourself into positions to receive those passes to be able to put shots on net.
And it's not like this guy is old. He's 30. But he's in great shape, and it's not like he's far removed from his last 20-goal season. He's a three-time 20-goal scorer, but he had 23 last season, splitting time between the Capitals and the Golden Knights. So, you know, he got 20-plus last season. I think he can get back to 20-plus this season if he stays healthy. And, again, a pretty decent start for him, I'd say.
By the way, the nine guys who had more than 300 shots last year, McKinnon, Pastrnak, Matthews, Brady Tkachuk, Forsberg, Nylander, Caulfield, Kucherov, and Panarin. Those were the guys with than 300 shots.
Good luck.
Here's the thing that is really important. If you can get those shot attempts up, right now he's averaging, so he's got 11 in five games, which would have him on pace for 180 shot attempts. You know, guys who were near the top of the league last year, David Pastrnak had 718 shot attempts last year. Philip Forsberg had 700. Matthews had 694. McKinnon, 692. Again, nobody's saying Mantha's in that group of players, but that shooting mindset, you need it to be more, like, you want him on pace for more than 180 shot attempts. So that's something that I'm really curious to see how it evolves. We're only five games into the season. And congrats to him for playing his 500th NHL game tonight. That's very cool. And I know it's been a long road for him to get here. It's our Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg. Hey, Connor Zary's a point-per-game guy to start the season. How have we felt about him on the Michael Backlund line? How have we felt about his fit there so far?
I mean, this is not meant to be a shot in any way, shape, or form at Connor Zary, but I think you could put just about anybody on the wing, left wing, right wing, because Blake Coleman's flexible and can play both positions. But I think you could put anybody on the wing with Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman. Maybe not Pat Steinberg or Aaron Vickers or definitely not Derek Wills.
I'm good for one.
Anybody on the Flames roster, and they would be put in a position to succeed. Backlund and Coleman are probably the easiest players to play with on this team. But with all of that said, they also have to do the heaviest lifting amongst the forwards. Defensive zone starts, going head-to-head against the other team's top players, especially when you can get those matchups more often with last change on home ice. And Connor Zary, for a second-year player, I think has fit like a glove on the left side of Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman. And it's one of the reasons, and we talked about this yesterday, okay, you've got Martin Pospisil centering Jonathan Huberdeau and Anthony Mantha for a couple of reasons. Number one, you want to see if that potentially is a long-term fit for him and for the team. Mm-hmm. But number two, you don't really have another option right now. Yegor Sharangovich would be, but he's hurt. Connor Zary, I guess, could be, but why would you move him off of that line? Pat, you said it yesterday, and I agree wholeheartedly. I think it's been, in the role they play as a 200-foot line, the most consistent line on this team in the first five games of the season. So I think an excellent start, 5 points in five games. A lot to like from the Flames' number 47 so far.
Yeah, you mentioned the responsibility that that line as a whole has to match up against each and every night, and we'll see it against the Pittsburgh Penguins on Tuesday. But Connor Zeri has an incredible on-ice goals percentage of 85.7. And even just the expected goals percentage in that is still 68.6. So when you think about the matchups that Backlund, Coleman, Zeri get, and the fact that Zeri and those two others, I don't want to say just those two others, but the conversation is Zeri specific, they've done an absolute great job. And you look at Zeri, you mentioned 2 goals, 3 assists for 5 points in five games, being a point-per-game player, avoiding that whole sophomore slump sort of narrative or jinx. He's managed to do that as well. You just look at everything that Connor Zeri's been able to do on that left side with Backlund and Coleman. You're right, there's no reason whatsoever to change it. I think he's been, I don't want to call him a pleasant surprise because he's not at all, especially with what he did last season, but that fit as a whole and what Connor Zeri's been able to contribute to that line has definitely been a positive for the Flames.
A few things. I mean, first of all, you take a look at that that line. They're sitting at 31.8% in terms of their ratio on offensive to defensive starts. 14 offensive zone faceoffs in five games, 30 defensive zone faceoffs to go along with a bunch in the neutral zone. So they clearly, and that's not a surprise. Nobody's listening and saying, oh, is that how they use the Backlund line? Like, that's how they've used the Backlund line multiple coaches for the last decade. That's kind of what it is.
But to hear those numbers, it still surprises
like,
even me.
It's like you're like, oh, geez, like they really get buried.
Yeah.
But what I think is kind of a, I don't know, somewhat of a misnomer. Like I'll read you this text that comes in, and it says, I think the Flames are wasting Zeri on the Backlund line. He's an offensive player. Put him on an offensive line. And my rebuttal to that would be like, one of their leading scorers last year was on that line. He scored 30 for the first time. Blake Coleman's best year in the NHL has, at least individually, has come on that line with that type of deployment. Just because you're on the Backlund line doesn't mean you don't, you're not asked to generate offensively, and it's gonna make it so that you can't generate offensively. Like we saw Andrew Mangiapane score 35 goals, and a good chunk of that year he was on the Backlund line. Backlund's been a 20-plus goal guy in this league. So I guess my point is that, yes, you have more difficult responsibility playing with those two guys because of how reliable and how good at the two-way game Coleman and Backlund are. But I think Zeri's been a really nice fit because he hasn't seemed to struggle at all with the two-way game and has still been able to generate for them offensively, sitting at a point per game. So I think that's a real positive that we've seen the offense still there from him. And I know part of it's come on the power play, and he's going to continue getting power play one looks until Sharon Govich is ready to return. But I don't think it's as detrimental to a guy's offense playing on that line if they're the right type of player. And so far, with how Zeri has increased his pace over the last couple of years, so far I think Zeri's been a good fit there. I'm not changing that, that's for sure.
And here's what I'll add. The Flames, especially with where they're at as a franchise, are in the player development business. And you can develop players in different places. You can develop them before they turn pro. You can develop them in the ECHL or the AHL. You can also develop them in the NHL. Connor Zeri is 23 years old in his second season in this league. What a great spot for him to be in, playing on a line with two reliable defensive players who can still produce offensively, and Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman. And what an opportunity for him how to learn how to play a 200-foot game from those two guys who have been doing it in this league for a long time. I still think that at some point in time down the road, maybe this season, probably this season, certainly next season or years down the road from now, he's going to play center. So I think develop him into a strong 200-foot player playing on the wing with Backlund and Coleman, and I think that puts him and the team in a better position moving forward, where he's going to have the versatility to be able to play with the puck, without the puck, offensively, defensively, and play that 200-foot game, whether it be on the wing or at center. And again, you love to have guys who can play at least two, if not all three, forward position. It gives you so much flexibility.
For me, if you would have wound the clock back or the calendar back 3 weeks ago and said through five games, Connor Zary is going to be a point-per-game player alongside Nazem Kadri, I would be like, perfect. That's a great start for a player that's entering his second season in the NHL. The fact that he's doing it with Backlund and Coleman doing much of the heavy lifting, you laid out the zone starts, Patrick, then he's still a point-per-game player on that line as well. Like, I don't see how it's anything but a positive from a development standpoint, but still from an actual today business results matter sort of perspective, the fact that he's still a point-per-game player despite that massive, massive burying in the defensive zone starts, I mean, that just helps both Zary as an individual and the Calgary Flames as a team now and later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, I know that one of our regular texters, Mick, is very
Megan?
Adamant. What's that?
Megan?
No, not Megan Mickelson, M-I-C-K. Our buddy Mick is very, I mean, Mick is a regular listener too, but she doesn't usually text into the text line. She'll text me directly, tell me how stupid I'm being. Mick's been very adamant about, you know, having Zary down the middle. Like, that's their guy. Why aren't they using them? And I think that they will. I think that at some point that is going to happen, to your point. But I think right now they've got a decent book. They know what he is at center. They've seen him play center at the Western League level, at the American League level, and for a slight amount of time at the NHL level. I think they will give him an opportunity to play down there or play down the middle at the NHL level as early as this season. But right now it's been a really good fit on that line with Backlund. And the reason why that can continue is because this experiment with Pospisil at center is something that they want to give some runway to as well, because they feel like that could be a really good tonic for Jonathan Huberdeau. And the last thing I'll say, just to one more point on the, well, you can't put up offense on the Backlund line. I mean, Matthew Tkachuk's best season prior to his last season in Calgary, when he had the 104 points on the Johnny and Lindholm line, was 18-19 that year under Bill Peters, when, yeah, there was the purple Gatorade line with Lindholm, Gaudreau, and Monahan, but then there was Backlund, Frolik, and Matthew Tkachuk. And Matthew Tkachuk had 34 goals and 77 points that year. So the whole idea that you can't play on one of the wings on the Backlund line and put up offense, I think, is a misnomer. It's more difficult only because of the difficult nature of the minutes they play, but they're not a defensive-only line. They're a two-way line, and if you're a good player, you can produce on that line, and so far Zary has. I'm very impressed.
And one thing we'll have to watch for is the Flames' face-off percentage. They have been the second-worst face-off team in the NHL this season, and Martin Pospisil has been their worst face-off man. Listen, he's done a lot of good things, transitioning from playing the wing to playing center. 5 points in his first five games, still leads the team in hits with 17, but boy, has he struggled in the faceoff circle. If he doesn't get better in that area, I do think that Ryan Huska will look to other players to fill that hole and maybe move Pospisil back to the wing. Now, that could be Yegor Sharangovich when he comes back. We know he can play up the middle, although he has to do some work on his face-offs as well.
Right.
But it could be Connor Zary, so we'll have to wait and see. But right now, the Flames are 4-0-1. He's playing fantastic on a line with Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman. So as it goes, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
That is your Daily Flames Roundtable. He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.